This is a Dragon Blazer production, and I am the Little Boogeyman. All
right. Welcome to Pro Wrestling Apologist Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Atkins. And with me, socially distanced in his Dragon Blazer production studio, is my kayfabe partner or kayfabe brother tag team partner, who if I were sharing a room with him right now, I would kick him through glass. I would kick him right through a window. Steven.
Oh, hi everyone. I'm cleaning off glass now.
So, as I said, we're doing a socially distanced episode. We're phoning it in. We're Zooming. I'm in the Catbox Studios in the Atkins Estate. And Steven's in the Dragon Blazer Studios. And hopefully the audio works for you. But by this point in the year 2020, you've heard a thousand Zoom podcasts by now. So you know what's up. So, Steven, what's your win of the week?
My win of the week?
What's your win of the week?
Well, I
believe... Well, first off, I guess we should address the opening there, the little Dragon Blazer Productions stinger at the beginning. go ahead and explain to us how that came to be.
Well, I got to interview Chris Holyfield. Don't know who that name is? Well, that would be the guy who played Little Boogeyman.
Little Boogeyman.
Yeah, Boogeyman's little guy that he used to feud with Hornswoggle and Fit Finley.
Yes.
He was also Little Booker T in a segment with The Rock. And he was also in the Little People's Court segment when DX was being sued by Hornswoggle.
Yep, it's what I've heard of. It's a really interesting conversation. And when can people hear that?
It will be this Wednesday.
This Wednesday.
Yes, it will be on the 12th. It's on my other show, the Rage and Blaze show with my brother, and we interview Chris Holyfield.
Where Steven is known as Blaze on that show.
On that show, yes. awesome interview. The guy was really fun to talk to. He talked a lot, which was awesome. We got a lot of good content. Found out some great things about The Rock. I definitely should listen to it.
So hop on over there to that podcast. They also review WrestleMania and SummerSlam. They review all the big pay-per-views, and they've been reviewing them in order. So it's a fun podcast to listen to.
Yes, I've been really enjoying it. We are currently on. We've watched 4 WrestleManias, 1 Survivor Series, and 1 Royal Rumble. Our next podcast will be the very first SummerSlam.
Nice. So, yep, go over there, check that out. Check out the Chris Holyfield. What's his name? Chris Holyfield?
Chris Holyfield.
Interview and enjoy that. So, Steven, I'm feeling like? Feeling like a little bit of...
PWA, WTF, Hall of Fame?
So, let's see if you can figure out who is in the next PWA Hall of Fame.
PWA WTF Hall of Fame.
All right.
Who will join the Shockmaster and Booker T saying the N-word?
Well, I've got 10 questions for you, 10 clues.
So many questions.
10 clues. Let's see if you can figure it out within 10 clues.
First clue.
Go ahead and just shout out an answer after every clue. First one, he wrestled primarily for WWE.
Okay.
That really narrows it down. He was, for clue number two, 6 foot, 4 inches, and 415 pounds.
WWE or WWF?
I believe it would be WWE. Okay. Because the next clue is he debuted in WWE in 2002. So he may have been a little bit of WWF.
That was WWF back then.
I believe the transition was 2002.
I don't think they had gotten the F out quite yet.
Well, remember, so you're big boy. To guess the gimmick and not the... Because he wrestled as something
dude.
Else. So you're trying to figure out this gimmick that we're talking about. Number four, his real name is Matthew Anoya.
Oh, so you're talking about Rosie.
Yep. Rosie. Yeah, the next clue is Samoan. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
His cousin is The Rock. He played college football for Hawaii. He unfortunately passed away in 2017. Roman Reigns is his little brother, and he is also known as Chemo with 3 minute warning.
Yep.
So figure that
I
out.
Remember Rosie.
I'm surprised you know his real name.
Cool.
All right. So as mentioned, we're talking about Rosie, the superhero in training.
That's right. After he was in 3 minute warning.
Yes. Rosie had a 3 year stint in WWE as the Hurricane sidekick. The Hurricane discovered his potential and called him Rosie the superhero in training. The shit.
Yes. I remember that now.
Rosie did many superhero-y things, like helping a lady cross the street. Who then whacks him because with her bag because she realizes he's shit.
Yes.
He awkwardly changed in a phone booth that he's way too big for. Yeah. And my favorite has a young girl begging for her cat.
Yeah.
She says, Mr. Snuggalot, to come down from a tree. And Rosie springs into the action and asks, what seems to be the problem, young lady? The girl says, it's my cat, Mr. Snuggalots. He's stuck up in the tree. And Rosie says, well, have no fear. Rosie's here. The superhero in training. The S-H-I, that's really not important here. Yes, Rosie just told an 8-year-old that he's the shit.
Yeah.
I promise
indeed you. Indeed, he was.
Yes. I promise you, young lady, I'll get Mr. Snuggalot to you lickety split. He saves the cat, and while the girl cheers him on, she asks him, how can she repay him? And then the Hurricane shows up, and he says, nonsense. There's no need to repay Rosie, because he was doing what all superheroes do, saving the day. He rambles on while Rosie walks back to the tree for some odd reason. And then the cat, which is clearly fake, now starts attacking him in a fake fight with the dummy cat and then slams it repeatedly into the tree. There's loud meowing and angry cat sounds. He then tosses the presumably dead cat and tells Hurricane, hey, we got another mission. Hurricane keeps telling him 1 second, and on the third time he yells, we need to go now. The kid looks around, looking where her cat was, It was a pretty weird, stupid, funny segment.
Yeah.
I watched it. I enjoyed it. They had a decent tag team run. He started out with a generic purple mask and a gray sweatshirt that said superhero in training. And he had purple and green striped shorts.
I remember.
They had
some fun times.
Yeah. They had matches with Jericho and Christian, Evolution, and La Resistance. On July 19th, 2004, Raw, Rosie graduated to a full superhero. In 2005 at Backlash, they even won the tag team titles. And then Stacy Keibler also joined them. And for a short while was known as Super Stacy.
Yep.
They eventually lost the titles to Lance Cade and Trevor Murdoch at Unforgiven. They started having a losing streak after that. Vince had Kurt Angle attack Hurricane, and this caused Hurricane to get angry and take off his mask and then attack Rosie. Hurricane then refused to wrestle in their tag team title match against Cade and Murdoch. He just stood at the entranceway and just watched his partner just get double teamed. And he was known as Gregory Helms for this at this time.
Yeah. Yeah. It was his big heel turn where he became Gregory Helms.
Yeah. Afterward, Helms said he was tired of being funny for the crowd, and he's been carrying Rosie during their tag team run. A couple weeks later, Helms defeats Rosie, and that was the end of the shit. And all I got to say is, what's up with that?
Yes. So, congratulations, Rosie.
Rosie the shit. Joining
the PWA WTF Hall of Fame. Rosie, who his tag team partner in Three Minute Morning was, correct? Jamal?
Yes.
He later became Umaga.
I did not catch that. I didn't really do Three Minute Warning too much, just knew that he was in it.
Okay, he later became Umaga. Unfortunately, both have passed away.
Yeah.
Umaga was a great, interesting character, too.
It's crazy how much of the Rock's family has wrestled in WWE.
Yeah, they really own wrestling. To this day, with Roman Reigns, the Usos, Nia Jax, Tamika.
Yeah, jeez. Such a big family from Hawaii.
Not from Hawaii.
Oh, well.
They're from the Isle of Samoa.
Oh, he played college for Hawaii, my bad.
Yes. All right. Well, that was a nice induction into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So let's get into
the meat.
All right. We had some terrible production last week, so we decided we're not doing it anymore. So, all right. Let's go into the Wayback Machine. On May 15th, 1985... in NWA Central States Wrestling, a new tag team consisting of a sexy boy by the name of Shawn Michaels and some dude by the name of Marty Jannetty defeated the tag team known as the Batten Twins, Brad and Bart Batten, to win the NWA Central States Tag Team Championship. Their first title reign was short-lived as the Benton Twins regained the title only a week later on May 22, 1985. Shortly after the team lost the CSW tag team title, Michaels left Kansas City and left the NWA, also leaving his partner, Marty Jannetty, and returned to his home state of Texas to work for Texas All-Star Wrestling. Didn't last long. In early 1986, both Jannetty and Michaels reunited and were signed by the American Wrestling Association, better known as AWA, of course, as they needed young talent to replace wrestlers that had switched to the World Wrestling Federation. I think we know that one. It's WWF. As it was expanding towards becoming a national company, the two were paired up by the AWA bookers who suggested the name the Country Rockers.
Oh, jeez.
And another idea for the name was the U.S. Express, as told by Marty during an interview on AWA television that aired in 1986. Michaels and Jannetty weren't fans of those names because they sucked. So they came up with the name the Midnight Rockers, inspired by Judas Priest's Living After Midnight. AWA owner Vern Gagne, however you pronounce his name, I think it's Gagne, did not seem to understand the idea, wasn't a Judas Priest fan. In fact, he quoted as to wondering if fans might confuse the name with rocking chairs.
Jeez.
Sort of out of touch. But the team, he allowed the team to go ahead and use the name. The two started wearing identical outfits and developed a fun-loving pretty boy gimmick that would be known throughout most of the time together. After wrestling on the lower end of the card to get fans familiar with the team, the Midnight Rockers soon moved on to a feud with the team of Doug Somers and Buddy Rose. At the time, were one of the top teams in the promotion. Their first match with Somers and Rose at the Russell Rock Stadium show on April 20th, 1986, did not go well for Jannetty and Michaels, who lost in front of 22,000 fans. When Somers and Rose beat Scott Hall and Kurt Hennig, we know them, for the AWA World Tag Team Championship, the Midnight Rockers suddenly found themselves chasing the main tag team titles of the promotion. The Midnight Rockers teamed up with Kurt Hennig to defeat Sommer, Rose, and Alexis Smirnoff at Battle by the Bay on June 28th, 1986, to prove that they were indeed capable of beating the champions. Midnight Rockers would challenge Sommers through the rest of 1986, but never quite be able to get the win when the title was on the line. Finally, near the end of that year, Jannetty and Michaels defeated the champions in a non-title steel cage match. On December 25th, that's Christmas, 1986, on the AWA's Brawl in St. Paul show, a month later, on January 27th, 1987, the Midnight Rockers defeated Rose and Somers for the AWA tag team titles. Jannetty and Michaels realized that the AWA was dead in the water, and they were right. It would, in fact, shut down completely by 1990, just a few short years later. And they decided that their best bet was to work for the ever-growing WWF. The Midnight Rockers got an offer from Vincent Kennedy McMahon while holding the AWA titles. The Midnight Rockers even signed with the WWF while still holding those titles, which led to a quick title change to the Dastardly Foreigners, Boris Zukov and Soldat Ustinov, on May 25th, 1987. The team made their first WWF appearance in 1987, only 5 days after dropping the AWA tag team titles at a house show in St. Paul, Minnesota, where they challenged the then WWF World Tag Team Champions, the Hart Foundation, for a title match. 4 days later, the Midnight Rockers wrestled at their first TV taping for the show WWF Wrestling Challenge, defeating the team of Jose Estrada Sr. and Jimmy Jack Funk. this match was their one and only taped appearance for the WWF, as they were fired only a few short weeks later. So there it is. The Rockers were done with the WWF. Their dreams of wrestling for the WWF were shattered. After the way that Jannetty and Michaels had left AWA, they couldn't just stroll on back in like, hey guys, we're back, truce. So instead, the Midnight Rockers started working for the AWA-affiliated Championship Wrestling Association, CWA. So I'm surprised they even let them come back in any capacity. They just couldn't come back into AWA. They just went for their affiliation in Memphis, Tennessee. The team had made a couple of appearances in the CWA in the past as part of their working agreement with AWA, but now they were in Elvis's hometown, Fulltown. Hometown full time. Shortly after arriving in the territory, Michaels and Jannetty turned heel, signing with manager Mark Gulin. Their first feud in Memphis was against a recently formed team known as the Nasty Boys.
Hey.
You know the Nasty Boys.
I do know the Nasty Boys.
Jerry Sags and Brian Knobs, whom they faced in several brutal matches all over the CWA territory. After the Nasty Boys, the Rockers got involved in a feud with the Nightmares, Danny Davis and Ken Wayne. Them, not so much. Their villainous, what were you saying?
Oh, I'm trying to think. I think I recognize Danny Davis's name. I think he's the ref guy on WWF. That's been in couple of WrestleManias.
Cool. I'll take your word for it.
I'm not real sure, but I recognize the name Danny Davis, so I'm wondering if it's him.
The villainous personas were that of a self-obsessed, like, glory-seeking superstars, which was kind of a precursor for Shawn Michaels' eventual Heartbreak Kid gimmick. So they're basically both that Heartbreak Kid gimmick in its early stages when they turned heel. Their feud with Team RPMs, whoever they are, saw the Midnight Rockers defeat Lane and Davis to win the AWA Southern Tag Team Championship. On October 26, 1987, Sean and Marty lost, then regained the Southern Tag Team title as the Midnight Rockers RPM's feud raged on. With their success in Memphis, the AWA started to book them as well. They were like, yeah, you guys are getting popular. You can come back, I guess. Having the Midnight Rockers split their time between Memphis and the AWA territory. In Memphis, the Midnight Rockers were heels, but in the AWA, they were baby faces.
That's got to be confusing.
It was a thing. Yeah, I imagine like when they're wrestling, they're like probably accidentally doing some heel tactics. I'm like, oh crap, we're not supposed to do that here. That was a thing during the territory days. Wrestlers would adapt to the crowd in the different territories and oftentimes alternate between babyface and heel. Sometimes, or something which was possible during the days of national television deals, or... I meant before the days of national television deals, sorry, and easy internet access. So, you know, it was easy to be whoever you wanted to be because the internet wasn't talking about it.
Right.
On December 27th, 1987, the Midnight Rockers defeated the original Midnight Express. So the Battle of the Midnights, Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose for the AWA World Tag Team title. Since they had won the AWA World Tag Team titles, Jannetty and Michaels were forced to vacate the AWA Southern Tag Team titles in January 1988. While in the CWA, they had a brief feud with the Rock and Roll Express over the AWA World Tag Team titles. After a short while in the AWA, Jannetty and Michaels began asking for more money and a guaranteed contract from owner Vern Gagne. When this request was denied, the Midnight Rockers quit the AWA without having found another promotion for which to work. Before they left the promotion, they lost the AWA Tag Team Championship on March 19th to Bad Company. Pat Tanaka and Paul Diamond was Bad Company. Shortly after leaving the AWA, Jannetty and Michaels were contacted once again by WWF owner Vince McMahon, informing them that he was willing to bring them back. And by the end of May, the team was working for the WWF under a new shortened name. What is that name, Steven?
The Rockers.
Indeed. They were now the Rockers. They officially made their television debut on the June 18th, 1988 edition of WWF Superstars of Wrestling in a squash match, which they won. The Rockers made their pay-per-view debut at the 1988 Survivor Series as part of a 10-team tag match. Rage and Blaze should be covering this soon, right?
Very soon. Our next one's SummerSlam. Then I believe we would have Survivor Series. So probably in about three episodes, because I think SummerSlam will probably be two parts.
All right. Well, spoiler for that, they eliminated the Bolsheviks from the match before being eliminated by double disqualification in a brawl with the Brainbusters. The brawl between the Rockers and Brainbusters led to a match taped for WWF Superstars of Wrestling, where both teams were disqualified once again, this time before the match could really start. This led to a series of house show matches between the two teams, a series of matches that drew rave reviews from fans. One match in particular on January 23rd, 1989 was rated as one of the 50 greatest matches in the PWI 10th anniversary issue. The Brainbusters narrowly defeated the Rockers as Anderson held down Marty Jannetty's leg as Blanchard pinned him. The feud continued to rage on as they clashed at Saturday night's main event 20 in a match that saw both teams counted out for brawling on the floor. So anytime someone gets annoyed at these wonky count out and DQ finishes in the modern product, it's been around for a while. They competed against the Twin Towers, Akeem and Big Boss Man, at WrestleMania 5. Another one that you should be covering soon.
Yeah, that one's a little later. Well, it's our next WrestleMania.
Is it your next one?
Yeah, we just...
Oh, yeah, you did
We just four, finished yeah. WrestleMania 4, so now we got to go through Survivor Series, SummerSlam, and Royal Rumble, and then we'll get to WrestleMania 5.
According to Michael's autobiography, he was nursing a severe hangover in the hours before that match. In spring 1989, the Rockers started a storyline with the fabulous Rougeau brothers that kicked off with an... What are you saying about the Rougeau brothers?
Oh, they've been in a few of the WrestleManias and shows we've watched, and they're just not very... They're fine.
They're fine.
They're fine. They're not, like, horribly bad, but... I haven't been impressed by them, which is probably why I never heard of them before we started this show.
They start a storyline with the fabulous Rougeau brothers that kicked off with an underhanded attack on Michaels during a match. The Rougeaus assaulted Michaels with manager Jimmy Hart's megaphone and drew blood. This storyline put the Rockers' issues with the Brainbusters on the back burners for a while the Rockers and the Rougeaus fought. The issue between the Rockers and Rougeaus was the storyline reason for introducing the Iron Man match to the WWF.
Ooh.
So you can thank the Rockers and the Rougeaus for introducing the Iron Man match.
Awesome.
Despite wrestling five Iron Man matches against each other, none of the matches were ever televised or released. On August 28th, 1989, the Rockers Rougeau feud made it to pay-per-view as Rougeaus teamed with Rick Martel to defeat the Rockers and Tito Santana at SummerSlam. In late 1989, the Rockers and the Brainbusters resumed their feud after the Brainbusters lost the WWF Tag Team Championship to Demolition. On November 23rd, the Rockers faced Arn Anderson as part of the 4-on-4 elimination matches at Survivor Series. Prior to the match, Tully Blanchard had failed a drug test and was fired, forcing manager Bobby Heenan to wrestle in his place. The Rockers and the Brainbusters had one last match at Saturday night's main event where they defeated the Brainbusters with Bobby Heenan filling in. Two falls to one. After the match, Bobby Heenan fired the Brainbusters in a backstage segment to explain why the team disappeared from the WWF. In December 1989, the Rockers feuded with the Powers of Pain until February 1990. In April 1990, the Rockers faced new competition in the form of Pat Tanaka and Akio Sato, the newly signed team known as the Orient Express. The two teams kicked off a prolonged feud that started at WrestleMania 6 and continued off and on for well over a year. When Sato decided to leave the American wrestling scene in December 1990, WWF decided to team Tanaka up with his former partner Paul Diamond under a mask. Tanaka and Diamond had previously teamed as Bad Company and won the AWA Tag Team Championship from the Rockers, as we covered earlier. The Rockers and the Orient Express had a high-profile, high-flying match at Royal Rumble. Now, by current WWE records, you might not know that. How many times do you think the Rockers held those WWF Tag Team Championships?
I'm going to say 4 times.
What if I told you, if you look at the current records in WWE, they've never once held them?
What?
By current WWE records, the Rockers never officially held the WWF Tag Team Championship. But on October 30th, 1990, Jannetty and Michaels did actually defeat the reigning champions, the Hart Foundation, in a 2-out-of-3 falls match in Fort Wayne, Indiana, to seemingly win the title. The WWF has never officially recognized the Rockers' championship status from this match. During the match, the top rope broke by accident, making the match a disjointed affair that would require serious cleanup before it could be shown on TV. So they scrapped it. They never aired it. The Rockers defended the WWF Tag Team title against Power and Glory, Paul Roma and Hercules, on November 3rd, 1990. Shortly after November 3rd, it was decided they were not going to air that match, and they never aired the title change. Wow. So it just automatically reverted back to the Hart Foundation. In his book, Shawn Michaels claims that the reason why the Hart Foundation had lost the title and eventually politicked to get the title back is because WWF had actually fired Jim Neidhart. And that caused this whole title, you know, fiasco to happen. And they eventually rehired him. They forced the title change, but after the match, the two sides came to an agreement and Neidhart was brought back. Huh. Rockers were never officially credited with a title win, but footage from the match was shown prior to Jannetty's WWF return in 1995. The match can be seen in its entirety on the DVD, The Shawn Michaels Story, Heartbreak and Triumph. Because it never aired, the match was not clipped and thus is shown in full with like no commentary, just a raw match. The only edit being after the second fall when a ring crew arrived to reattach the broken rope. So that's a mess. So the one time they ever won the title was just never recognized.
That's crazy.
After teaming together since 1985. The Rockers finally split up in December 1991 after some backstage disputes with each other. The exact nature of the dispute has not been confirmed by the WWF, other than it was a money issue that led to Jannetty quitting the WWF on behalf of both Rockers. According to Michael's book, Jannetty had claimed WCW were willing to give them a very high guaranteed contract. But when Michaels inquired about it, turned out to be an exaggeration. Jannetty disputes this, saying that Michaels was the driving force suggesting that they quit the WWF. But Michaels had Jannetty do the phone call to ask for the release from the contract. When Vince McMahon actually agreed to let them go, Michaels appeared shocked by the news. And according to him, he later went to McMahon, unbeknownst to Jannetty, to explain that this was Jannetty's idea and that he had no intention of leaving the WWF himself. This was a mess. I've heard this story told. I've heard both sides of the story told, and they both kind of point at each other. They point blame at each other. But Jannetty's story is that Shawn Michaels told him, "Yeah, go ahead and quit," and then went to Vince McMahon, shocked that Jannetty would quit, basically trying to save his own ass. After cooler heads prevailed, it was decided that the Rockers should split up, with Michaels turning heel to feud with Jannetty. Jannetty was not happy about the team splitting. This was all thrown at him without his awareness. He was pissed, and Michaels just couldn't wait to work as a singles wrestler. He really started feeling that Jannetty weight on his shoulders. On screen, there's no mention of what went on backstage, of course. Instead, Michaels and Jannetty started to show signs of dissension in the ring. During a singles match between Michaels and Ric Flair, Jannetty rolled Shawn into the ring to get pinned. Michaels took this as Jannetty costing him the match instead of helping him out. At the 1991 Survivor Series, Jannetty caused Michaels to be eliminated by accidentally slamming one of the Nasty Boys into him, after which the Rockers argued. After the build-up, the Rockers wrestled one last match on television, a title shot at the Legion of Doom, which the Rockers lost after Jannetty and Michaels argued over who was to blame. A DVD extra on the Heartbreak and Triumph, and also in Michaels' autobiography of the same name, titled The Rockers Fight, reveals that they got into a legit fight in May 1991 that was instigated by Roddy Piper. The incident, according to Shawn Michaels, happened as the boys were intoxicated. Piper, also drunk, just a drunken mess back there, started talking about how Michaels would be an even greater competitor in the business, and that he would be the future of the business, which he was not wrong about.
No, he wasn't.
Not at all. Drunken Piper really had a great vision of the future. Piper stated that Michaels had a great future in the business, and Michaels had all the talent, and Jannetty took that as an insult and challenged Michaels to a fight, to which Michaels declined. Jannetty, however, would not take no for an answer, and he attacked Michaels, which started the fight. Piper pulled the two apart, and Michaels passed out right after. He was just so shit-faced that he just passed out. And he wouldn't come to until the next day. The story told by Jannetty reveals that police were called to the scene and arrested Jannetty. As they were arresting him, though, Randy Savage stepped in and prevented him from going to jail by telling the police that it was all part of a storyline, even though it wasn't. And Randy didn't even know about the fight or anything. He just saw this going on. He wanted to step in and help his buddy, being a real ass dude.
Sweet.
Michaels almost quit the WWF over the incident, and Jannetty believes that this incident was one of the factors in the WWF's decision to break up the Rockers. The final split came on Brutus the fucking Barber Beefcake's barbershop, where Beefcake interviewed the Rockers about their recent problems. After seemingly working through their problems, Michael suddenly super kicked Jannetty and threw him through the glass window of the barbershop set. Just iconic, very memorable moment. Michaels also proceeded to rip a full-page picture of the group in half, signifying the separation. One of the most iconic and memorable splits in wrestling history. It's even a term in the wrestling industry for when a team is ready to split, that one teammate is bigger than the other and he's ready to kick his partner through the barbershop window. In actuality, he didn't kick him through the window. That's the way it's described. He super kicked him and then threw him through the window. But regardless, the turn had the desired effect of making Michaels a hated heel, especially since the WWF agreed to let Jannetty blade and make himself bleed after being thrown through the window, something which was not very common in 1991. It also prevented Jannetty from entering the Royal Rumble in 1992. This basically ends the story of the classic tag team, the Rockers. But there's more.
Oh.
Michaels and Jannetty were supposed to feud with each other following the breakup, but Jannetty was suspended by the WWF due to an incident outside a Tampa nightclub that occurred in January 25th, 1992. He's arrested and put under house arrest for months in charges of resisting arrest with force, cocaine possession, and possession of drug paraphernalia, forcing the feud to be abandoned, at least temporarily. While Jannetty was away on his little drug vacation, Michaels began developing his Heartbreak Kid heel persona, including getting a manager, Sherry Martel, who originally sang his theme music before eventually being replaced by Michaels just singing about himself being a sexy boy. Originally, Sherry Martel sang about him being a sexy boy.
I think I did know that, actually.
Michaels also won the Intercontinental Championship from British Bulldog. On the October 31st, 1992 edition of WWF Superstars, Michaels was in the ring posing before a match, admiring himself in a mirror that Sherry had brought to the ring. To everyone's surprise, Marty Jannetty came down through the crowd and entered the ring. Jannetty attacked Michaels, grabbed the mirror, and tried to hit Michaels with it. But Michaels pulled Sherry in front of himself so that she got hit with the mirror instead. This led to Sherry being hospitalized from glass shards and kayfabe, of course. When Sherry returned from her recovery, she turned on Michaels and actually backed Jannetty in his unsuccessful attempt to take the Intercontinental title away from Michaels at the 1993 Royal Rumble. After the loss, Jannetty was fired by the WWF for supposedly being drunk or hungover during the match. However, Mr. Perfect reported that it was actually due to a lack of sleep and Jannetty was spared. During an episode of Monday Night Raw on May 17th, 1993, Jannetty returned to the WWF during an impromptu challenge. Jannetty defeated Michaels to win the title with the help of Mr. Perfect. 3 weeks later, Jannetty lost the title back to Michaels in an untelevised house show thanks to interference of Michaels' new bodyguard, Diesel, Kevin Nash. After losing the title, the Michaels-Jannetty feud fizzled out, with Michaels focusing on the other title challengers while Jannetty wrestled in mid-card until leaving the WWF in the spring of 1994. Jannetty's gone. In the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels began his meteoric climb to being arguably the greatest wrestler to ever lace up a pair of boots. But this isn't about Shawn Michaels and his solo career. This is about the Rockers. So we continue the story with the Rockers. In September 1995, Jannetty returned to the WWF and initially worked in the singles division. In early 1996, Jannetty was introduced to a new WWF hire. He was told that he would be his new tag team partner as the New Rockers. Do you remember the New Rockers?
I don't remember who you tagged with, but I remember the New Rockers being a thing.
The idea was initially going to be more or less straight up return to the Rockers gimmick, but the decision was soon made to turn them into a more silly comedy heel character. According to Marty Jannetty in the book, the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, the tag teams, they were told that the idea was for them to be like watching the 1960s television show, The Monkees.
Oh.
Complete with Jannetty's partner being named Leif Cassidy, which is a playoff of 70s idols David Cassidy and Leif Garrett. Going against his better judgment, Jannetty agreed to it. If nothing else, then to help his new partner out who was trying to find a gimmick in the World Wrestling Federation. Jannetty was later informed that former partner Shawn Michaels had been the one to suggest the change in the gimmick, of course. Shawn Michaels had the grand idea to turn them into comedy heels based on 70s television shows. That bastard.
I have.
Michaels he's just at the top of his game trolling his former tag team partner. The team was never seriously pushed in the WWF, making only a couple of low card pay-per-view appearances before Jannetty decided to leave the WWF in December 1996. Leif Cassidy also left the WWF to go back to his original home, ECW, and to go back to his real name, a name you might be more familiar with, Al Snow.
Oh, okay.
So Al Snow was once a rocker.
Jeez.
In the years following Jannetty's 1996 departure, Michaels became a born-again Christian. This helped the two patch up their differences once and for all when Michaels shared his faith and aided Jannetty in becoming a Christian as well. On the SmackDown shown on March 10th, 2005, so we're jumping way into the future, we're jumping almost a decade, Kurt Angle announced that as a part of his preparation for his WrestleMania 21 match against Shawn Michaels, he would face Michaels' old partner, Marty Jannetty, on the following SmackDown. The following Monday, March 14th, 2005, Jannetty made a surprise appearance on WWE Raw, and for one night, the Rockers reunited to take on La Resistance, Sylvain Grenier and Rob Conway. Jannetty got the win with the Rocker Dropper after Michaels hit his Sweet Chin Music on Grenier. 3 days later, on SmackDown, Angle had promised to make Jannetty tap out, just like he was going to make Michaels tap out at WrestleMania 21. Angle made good on his promise and forced Jannetty to submit to his ankle lock submission. But only after a nearly 20-minute match and a very impressive showing for Jannetty, which saw him nearly pin the Olympic champion. I remember watching the short reunion, and it was honestly my first time seeing Jannetty, because I wasn't really watching during the Rockers' time. Like I was a child, and I watched some of it, but you know, you see things different as a child. I'd remembered the Rockers, but this was my first time really seeing Jannetty, and I was very impressed. This was an impressive short run. Hmm. It was a lot of fun. Jannetty looked great. After two good showings on Raw and SmackDown to convince the WWE that he was still a very talented performer, they actually signed him to a contract. However, in typical Marty Jannetty fashion, there was a domestic dispute I don't know the details of this, but Jannetty was arrested and was unable to meet the commitments of his WWE contract, which led to him being released on July 6th, 2005. On the February 20th, 2006 edition of Raw, Michaels was pitted against four of the five members of the Spirit Squad in their in-ring debut. It's actually their first match. After he had connected with Sweet Chin Music, Michaels was attacked by all five members until an unknown man came storming to the ring to defend Michaels. During the melee, it was revealed that it was Jannetty coming to defend his former tag team partner. Later on Raw, Mr. McMahon came out to mention that he would offer Jannetty a full-time contract. However, McMahon added a stipulation. Jannetty had to join a special club.
The Spirit Squad?
The Vince McMahon Kiss My Ass Club.
Oh, yes, I remember that club.
The following week on Raw, Jannetty refused to kiss the ass of Mr. McMahon. So Vince instead offered Jannetty the possibility of breaking Chris Masters' signature submission hold, the Master Lock. Remember Chris Masters and the...
I do remember the Master Lock.
The time nobody had broken out of the Master Lock. So he would lock it on a different person every week. So Vince told him if he could break out of that Master Lock, then he would get his contract. Jannetty appeared to be almost break the hold, but McMahon, who was officiating, punched Jannetty in the dick.
Oh, jeez. And dick.
And Jannetty... Sorry. Jannetty, oh man, I lost track here. Hold on. Punched him in the dick. Jannetty was not able to break the Master Lock due to being punched in the dick. Only being released when Michaels ran in to save him. Shortly after Michaels had saved Jannetty, Shane McMahon ran in with a steel chair and knocked out Michaels. Former Rockers were supposed to continue a program with the McMahons, but Jannetty was absent from the next edition of Raw, which meant they had to rewrite the angle, leaving Jannetty out of it. Do you see a theme here? Jannetty keeps on
getting himself in trouble.
He keeps on. He's there. He keeps getting second chances, third chance. Now, in those early days, obviously, he was kind of screwed over by Michaels. Michaels, you know, did some finagling to get him in trouble, but he just can't stop tripping over his dick here. In December 2007, Michaels began feuding with Mr. Kennedy.
I always loved Mr.
Kennedy. Kennedy was set to face off against Jannetty at the Raw 15th Anniversary Spectacular. Kennedy won the match, but continued being down Jannetty. Michaels then came out to save his former partner from a beating. Before Michaels had a chance to get the first punch, Kennedy quickly recognized that he was coming out to the ring and started an assault on him until Triple H, Sean's DX partner, of course, came out and Kennedy escaped. On October 19th, 2009, Jannetty made an appearance on Raw, losing in a match against The Miz. Unrelated to the Rockers, he just made one off appearance, and that was the end of Marty Jannetty in the WWE. Shawn Michaels, of course, transcended into legendary status before retiring from professional wrestling, aside from a poorly thought-out one-time return to a terrible tag team match in Saudi Arabia. And he now makes regular appearances on NXT. Jannetty, well, he spent some time in Chikara as a wrestler and trainer, but more recently he's been making waves by saying completely insane shit on his social media. In 2014, Jannetty had learned the existence of his daughter named Bianca. Jannetty, who struggles with drugs and alcohol addictions, vowed to turn his life around after she got in touch with him. Touching, you know, he found out he had this daughter and he wanted to turn his life around for his beautiful daughter.
When she
we'll get there.
Oh, okay.
3 years later, in the summer of 2017, he posted her photo with the caption. Actually, I don't think I have her age. Yeah, I don't know. I think she was an adult. Okay. I think she was an adult. Anyway, 3 years later, in the summer of 2017, he posted a photo of his beloved daughter with this caption. And I quote, "If you loves me as much as I loves you, you will give your opinion. Just did DNA 2 weeks ago. She's not my daughter. We both held out of sex because you don't do that. But now, that we ain't, from a guy's side, she's fucking hot. But she's been daughter. I want to too, but can't get past that."
What the fuck?
Marie Jenny really wants to fuck his daughter. but he can't. Oh. Because, but she's been daughter.
I mean,
I think that might have to be the name of the podcast, but she's been daughter.
I mean, grammar issues aside, the fuck?
If he thought wanting to fuck his daughter was crazy, let's jump 3 more years to just earlier this week. Jannetty posts once again on social media. "I never told no one this, even my brother Gino, because Gino would have killed him. And I didn't want my brother gone. Hell, he'd only recently come home from Vietnam. I was 13, working at Victory Lane's bowling alley, buying weed from a expletive for homosexuals that worked there. And he put his hands on me. He dragged me around to the back of the building. You already know what he was going to try to do. That was the very first time I made a man disappear. They never found him. They should have looked in the Chattahoochee River. But Winnie, the girl in these pics," and he's got a picture below of Winnie, "I likes you so damn much. Probably my favorite. But I promised myself way back then nobody would ever hurt me again. That includes you. I loved you, but you hurt me with your fucking Jamaican jealousy. You can go your own way. I don't need you." Thoughts?
The fuck?
He just, apparently him and Winnie are splitting up and he decided to confess to murder. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
As one does.
I think the biggest takeaway amidst the homophobia and racism and murder is that he said this was the first time he made a man disappear. How many people have died at the hands of Marty Jannetty? After he posted that he murdered a man, police opened up an investigation into these claims. And Jannetty was interviewed for the Boston Wrestling MWF YouTube channel about what appeared to be a confession that he killed a man. Jannetty said he did not kill this man, but he did attack the man who he says was later reported missing. "I didn't say I killed him," he continued. "I said he disappeared." Jannetty said he jumped out of a car after the man tried to fondle him. He said the man grabbed him by the hair and shirt and dragged him to the back of the bowling alley, throwing him to the ground. "I won't lie, I was scared," he said. Jannetty said he picked up a brick from the ground and beat the man in the head. "I can't say he deserved to die, but he deserved to get his ass beat," Jannetty said. I made up my mind that day nobody would ever hurt me again. He said he threw the man in the river and found out in the news he was missing. All I know is that man, no other kids had to worry about him, Jannetty said. It's unclear who the man was and whether or not he died as a result of the encounter with Jannetty. So Jannetty said, I did not say I killed the man. I just killed the man. I didn't kill the man. I just beat him with a brick through my river and he went missing.
I'm pretty sure he was alive when I tossed him. So,
So the takeaway here, if this story is even true, is, this man deserved to die. He was trying to rape a 13-year-old Marty Jannetty, 13-year-old Midnight Rocker.
I mean,
he just up and decides to confess this because somebody named Winnie left him.
it's seems very confusing. Like a vague threat.
So there you have it. That is the story of the Rockers. I think the wanting to fuck his daughter and confessing that he murdered a man, unfortunately, kind of becomes the legacy of Marty Jannetty's career at this point, where Shawn Michaels' career took a little bit of a different path.
Just a slight difference. I'm trying to think which one's crazier.
This is a tag team that couldn't have a wider contrast between the two members of the team.
Yeah, it had a wider contrast just because Shawn Michaels actually did something. And then 2000, what was it, 17? It just goes off the deep end for one of them.
Well, I think the problem is it kind of always... I'm thinking that drugs and alcohol have always been prevalent in his entire life and have been the crux of all of his issues. I think, he's had his domestic disputes that he had been released from that I didn't look into the details of all of his various releases. But he seems to have always been plagued with different problems, and I'm thinking drugs and alcohol have been behind a lot of those problems. And I think drugs and alcohol might have something to do with wanting to fuck his daughter and whatever went on with Winnie that made him confess to murder.
I'm kind of thinking that we should switch. Marty Jannetty should be in the what the fuck segment. Instead of
this is a whole shit. What the fuck episode, really.
Yeah, really.
But they, they were a hell of a tag team.
Sure.
Yes. So, Steven, plug your pluggables.
Well, you can follow me on Dragon Blazer Productions on Facebook. Dragon Blazer Productions on Instagram, and also my YouTube page, Dragon Blazer Productions, and my Twitter is at Dragon Blazer Pro.
He's just Dragon Blazing all over the place.
All over.
You can follow this show at PW Apologists on the Twitter, and you can follow me at Craiger Atkins also on the Twitter if you want to. And that's been Pro Wrestling Apologists. We love professional wrestling. And sometimes that's okay.
Yeah, I don't know about this one.
Not okay when you're trying to fuck your daughter.
That's not okay.
And scene.